This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
And it's so very true. Here's your host, Steve Ulscher. How you doing? Oh, man. Oh, man. What a lovely day in the San Diego area. As a matter of fact, I'd come to conclude that damn near every day in the San Diego area is quite beautiful and lovely, which is a nice change of pace. I lived in Chicago for 45 years. I did my time. And why the hell didn't I get out of here earlier? I mean, that's the question. Mary Goulet's still hanging out with me, right, Mary? You're hanging?
Yes, I am.
You're hanging
I'm
for
here.
Now. Yay.
I love the city of Chicago.
Well, you know what? The city of Chicago is the best city in the world 6 months out of the year. But here's the thing.
You're right.
You never know which 6 months it's going to be. I mean, that's like the reality, because like it could be nicer in February. No, that's not even true. It could be nicer in March in Chicago than it is in like July.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I've spent a lot of time there, and I just love it. The city is so awesome.
Yeah, no, Chicago's great. But as I said, I did my time there,
yeah.
Which is a hell of a segue. I mean, Dean, you're probably appreciating this one, because I mean, that's like, could there be a better segue for that, Dean? So I've done my time. And speaking of doing time, we've got Dean Chardon on the line with us today, and super excited to have my man with us. Wow. So, dude, I mean, really, felon turned comedian and all that other stuff. On the break, I was saying to Mary that, so basically, like, you could probably make me laugh while you're, like, stealing my wallet, basically. Is that, am I right there, or what am I thinking?
You know what? I don't really do that anymore. I could probably make you laugh, but I don't think I'd take your wallet any longer. Maybe back in the day, I guess.
Oh, man, that's funny. Dude, so talk to us a little bit about, you know, if you're just joining us, welcome to Reinvention Radio. The unique thing about this show, Dean, is not only are we live right now, but this will also be as a podcast for Reinvention Radio. So we do it a little bit differently around here. And one of the things that we do differently, Dean, is we do take callers. So if you do want to call in and chat with Dean or chat with me or chat with Mary or chat with Wade, we're all here hanging out. And the phone number is 866-977-2346. And number one is what you want to press as we're sitting here in Studio A. You know, Dean, I did a pretty large event this past weekend called Internet Profits Live. And, you know, I got to tell you, keeping people's attention for 3 days is tough, but you have the hardest job, like, in the world, which is keeping people's attention is one thing, but making people laugh and keeping them entertained is a whole other story. Like, I mean, take us back through. So you obviously had a kind of a rough go there for a little while. What was that rough go like, man? And then how did you end up turning the corner and realize you could make people laugh?
Well, it's weird. Like, when I was a child, I was the youngest of four, you know, and we grew up in a relatively small house. We weren't super wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, each of the kids all had their own gift, and mine was always laughter. And that's how I got attention in the family. I was the cute kid, and I told jokes. And the gift of making someone laugh has always been there in me. And, you know, for a long time, I lost that. I started doing stand-up comedy back in, I guess, the early 90s, right after I got out of the military. And I did it on a dare. Somebody said, we were at a comedy show, and I said, I could do that. And they said, no, you couldn't. And I said, yeah, I could. They said, I dare you. And I said, okay.
So what was the first joke you told? I know you remember this. What was the first joke? I got a great Jesus and St. Peter joke, but what was the first joke you told?
Actually, it was the typical first-time stand-up comedy joke. It was, you know, about the male anatomy. I don't know.
No, dude, this is an internet radio show, and it goes to a podcast. Say whatever the fuck you want.
Okay, it was a dick joke, right? I told a dick joke, and it wasn't funny. I did, like, the first time I went up on stage. No, it was horrible. It was horrible. But the first time I went on stage, I think I did 4 minutes, and out of 4 minutes, I might have gotten one chuckle. And that one chuckle was enough to hook me and make me go home and write some different jokes and try out different things. And it was an incredibly painful process. And anyone who was there in the beginning, I'm so sorry you had to sit through all of that, but I'm glad you stuck around now.
You know, it's funny. I wouldn't even say that I play golf. I would say that I have a stick and I hit a little white ball around somewhere. Because that's really doing the game a disservice if I say I actually play it. So, you know, but it's like, you know, you get that one shot, man, over the course of a round, and it keeps you coming back game after game after game. And
that's
so
the thing. It was so addictive for
exactly.
me. You know what I mean? That was my first hit, you know what I mean? And I was just stuck on it after that point. There was nothing else I wanted to do.
You know, laughter, I mean, is a huge, well, not only is it something that binds us all, of course, but it's also, I mean, it to me, and just based on what I know in terms of scientifically, it actually is a healing mechanism as well. So the power of laughter is, I mean, it has much more power than I think, you know, people really do understand. But go back to some of the, you know, I want you to cry here because, well, no, actually, I do want you to cry. So, you know, take us back through some of the darker days. Where, I mean, you know, it's not everybody who I have on the show who can say fell and turned comedian. So you got to tell that story. What happened?
So I was doing some stand-up comedy, and I was actually starting to come up in the business. You know, I usually start off as an open micer, and then you go to what's known as the MC or the host of the event. And then you go to a feature spot, which is the middle guy before the headliner comes on. And I was starting to catch some gigs where I was either the middle or the headliner, which closes out the show. And in stand-up comedy, you know, you don't make a whole lot of money in the beginning.
Well, you know, I've got buddies who still do stand-up. Do you know Dobie Maxwell, by the way?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know him real well. He's a good dude.
Oh, man, yeah, Dobie's
very
great.
Funny.
Yeah,
I love him. He's funny.
Yeah,
great,
he's great.
Guy.
His Hooters gig is priceless. Look up that Hooters gig on Dobie Maxwell when you get a chance. But so, yeah, I mean, you don't get paid a lot of money. I get that. What happened?
I didn't get paid a lot of money, and I kind of felt like the world owed me something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes back to the childhood and not having a whole lot, and I was angry. I'd just gone through a divorce. I got out of the military, and I was hanging around some real knuckleheaded guys that like to do dumb things like running guns and selling drugs and everything else. And, you know, I was just part of I was wrapped up in a crazy lifestyle, and I woke up one day, and I was dead broke, and I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go rob a bank today.
Wow.
You did not.
He did.
It was the weirdest thought.
Well,
it was
but here's the thing.
Just said it.
But the good thing is he was running guns. So, I mean, it wasn't like that far of a stretch. He didn't have to go look very far. He was like, oh, hold on. Oh, look at that.
This is my career path.
I've got a gun right here.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Seriously, I had basically a normal life other than the stupid things I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. I don't know. That's kind of hard.
Yes,
I guess
welcome to being human.
To
yes.
So you were.
This is where normal goes to die. So that's where I was.
So you were a comedian, and then you wanted to rob banks.
Yes, I woke up one day and I said, you know what? I don't care if I live or die anymore. I've just had enough, and I'm broke, and I'm going to go rob this bank. And if I have a shootout with the police, they'll just kill me, and it'll be over with.
Wow.
And that was my thought. So I went
where,
to the,
where were you living at the time, by the way, Dean?
Up in Belding, Michigan.
Okay. Well, I understand that.
Yeah, part of your problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's so funny. You were saying how beautiful it is there, and I was thinking back to, you know, Belding and St. Louis in the winter. And,
yeah, well,
I was just thinking to myself,
see, we can all laugh about it now,
I'm from
Dean.
Minnesota.
Now it's funny.
I left Minnesota at 17, so smarter than both of you.
Right.
So they're beautiful in the spring and the early summer,
yes.
And even sometimes in the fall, but those other periods of the year, they're horrible.
Yeah, I got
anyway,
you.
Anyway, so I went and I chased the bank out, which means I basically I drove by it and saw that there was a bank there. And I said, yep, that's the one. And there was no rhyme or reason. It just, that was the bank.
Wait, let me guess. And you chose Chase Bank for obvious reasons.
Ah, I see what you did
see,
there.
See what I did right. there? That's good, right? See, I can make a career out of this. It's pretty good. If I can make a comedian laugh, I've got hope. There's hope. I got a gut hit right now, Mary. I've got a gut hit.
You know, it's not easy to be a comedian. I took a class in L.A.
No, it's not.
It's really hard. I thought, I'm funny. Well,
yeah, okay.
Can
you let him tell a story?
I know, but it's hard to do that. So you have such a great gift. All right.
See, it's so funny when you guys say it's hard to be a comedian. Like, I go on stage and I just tell stories from my life and people laugh, and I drink beer while I'm doing it, and it's kind of like a big family event, and it's fun. You know, it's hard, like being a doctor's hard.
I know,
what I mean? Or, a, you know what I mean? Like a soldier. That's incredibly hard.
So, like, when things go bad in your world, it's like...
I tell jokes.
When things go bad in your world, it's like, you know... Yeah, they didn't laugh, so we got to try again. But if you're like a neurosurgeon and things go bad, it's like, yeah, man, I'm sorry, your father fucking died, man. I'm sorry. So
yeah,
you know,
exactly. My job is not hard at all. I'm just an idiot. That's what I do.
So eventually we'll get to this story here, but we're probably gonna end up having to take a break at some point. But so you're sitting there and you're going, okay, first of all, I'm gonna do what do you call it? You call it a bank chase, where like you literally go by the bank to figure out if there's a bank there.
Yeah, I drove by and I found a bank and I said, yep, that's the one. I said I was casing the place, you know, like
casing.
Yeah. All I was doing was just, there was a bank there. That's the one.
Nice. And what was the name of the bank, by the way? Because I know you remember.
You know what? I honestly don't. That's so bad. I've kind of blocked out certain things. And that's one of them. I couldn't tell you where it was at. I just drove around that day and I robbed it. I'm sure it's on my indictment paper. But I haven't seen that in years because I put it in a drawer and only pull it out when I think about how horrible it was to be in there and how much I don't want to ever go back.
All right. So here's what we're going to do, because what I want to know is, we were talking about sort of the gut, the intuition in a past episode here, because I'm going to say episode because if you're listening on a podcast, then it would be an episode. If you're listening live, then it would be the last hour. But what I want to talk
Thanks
about.
Thanks for sharing.
Exactly. I know it's way too much information. But what I want to talk about is that gut hit, you know, because we do have Mary in the house today. And so after the break, man, we're gonna talk about that, because there's that yay no moment where you're just like, man, do I do this or don't I do this? So after the break, I want you to take us through exactly what happened when you got out of the car and you were like, it's time.
Okay.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
Alrighty. All right, Diener. So take us through, if you're just joining us live here, Dean Chardon. By the way, I don't want to butcher your name. Is it Chardon, or how do you say it?
That's perfect. That's exactly how you say it.
All right, sweet. So Dean was telling us about his, that moment, literally, where he was casing out the bank and trying to go through his mind. Or was there just no question, man? Like, when you got in the car, you were just looking for the bank, and you just knew it was the matter of which bank it was going to be, and you were coming out with your guns blazing.
Yeah, it was so weird because, like I told you, at that point in my life, I was too weak to take my own self out.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that I would just, I'd rob a bank, and that if that didn't solve my money problems, then I would rob another one, and eventually there would be a shootout, and it would just be over.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my mindset was. And by the way, after I robbed the first bank, which is the story I'm telling you about now, a day later I did a stand-up comedy show. I did an hour and 15 minutes and got a standing ovation at the end.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet you're funny as hell at that point when you lose. I mean, you lose all the inhibitions at that moment.
Yeah, I got to a point in life where I just said, that's it. I'm just going out with a blaze of glory. And I didn't have any fear. I didn't look at price tags. I didn't worry about, what was going to happen tomorrow. It was just what is happening right now, this very moment.
Okay, so can you walk us through the first, when you did that, you just opened up the door and would the classic go up to the teller and say,
this is a bank robbery, right?
Yeah, what did you do?
What'd you say?
I had written out a note in the car, And I said, you know,
was it a joke?
Bank robber. No, no, it wasn't.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
Bank
Give me
robber.
Your fucking money.
Exactly. That's an approach.
That would have been interesting, yeah. But no, I went with a different route. I
what did your note say?
You know, I wrote on the note, you know, something to the effect, this is a robbery. I have a gun. Put all the 20s, 50s, and 100s in a bag. Don't call the police for 5 minutes. And
does that actually work?
Listen, I don't want to glorify it at all, okay. And I certainly don't want to encourage anyone to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Bank robbery, as far as crimes go, are a really relatively simple process. The bank itself wants to get you in and out of there without anyone getting hurt. You know, and God forbid you ever, you know, that happens. Occasionally, the teller will get brave and press the panic button or whatever. But for the most part, they follow instructions because they don't want someone else inside the bank to get hurt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And knowing that, that's why I wrote a note. I never actually brandished a gun. I never had to, even though I had one at one point. I never actually had to show it because, you know, like when I went through a lot of therapy afterwards because I wanted to not be that person anymore. Mm-hmm. Part of the thing in that therapy was I had to put myself in the other people's shoes. Mm. And can you imagine being the bank teller and, you know, some knucklehead comes in there with nothing to lose and getting that note? And you know what I mean? It was just, mm-hmm. that was one of my aha moments in my, I call it recovery, even though I wasn't really addicted to any drugs or anything. I was addicted to a lifestyle. But in my recovery, that's one of the things that I had to do. Is I had to mm-hmm. go put myself in that person's shoes and walk a
And that,
Walk
I mean, that is so hard to do, man. I mean, especially when we take it, we were talking about business earlier and just kind of the gut check, you know, the intuitive hit and whatnot. And so, man, to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and really see it from their perspective, that is a game changer. And so few of us can do that. But, man, I got to tell you, when you look at this scenario of walking into a bank with a gun, knowing that you could possibly die and you were willing to possibly go down that road, I think we can all get a pretty decent sense of where your head was at. And it was not in a good place, man. So was this attributable, do you think, to any of your service? Like, PTSD, man? What was going on at that point?
No, I really honestly believe I was carrying around a lot of chains from, you know, when I was a kid and we were broke. And I, you know, that was back in Reaganomics and Carter and all of that. And I blamed so much of my problems, of my family's, you know, financial problems on the government. You know, my dad had worked for a company for like 30 years. And he had gotten laid off during the time Reagan was in office, and they hired somebody younger and paid him less. And so as a child, when I saw that, I thought, man, the government is bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're evil people. And it just, nowhere along the line did that change until, you know, after I went to prison for bank robbers.
Yeah.
I was just so mad at the world that I couldn't find a way to vocalize it other than the path that I chose.
So the bank robbery itself, first of all, was there more than one or was there only one?
There were four bank robberies. I was questioned in eight and took a plea agreement to four.
But allegedly you were involved with four bank robberies.
No, I was involved with four bank robberies.
You were the guy.
Allegedly, I was involved in eight.
So
but
how
I definitely was involved in four.
Wait, did you get money? I mean, like literally, did the first three times, I assume you got caught on the fourth. I mean, otherwise there would have been a fifth. But did you, you got money. Was it good money? We're not trying to glorify this, just trying to get a sense of like what people will hand over.
Well, I'll tell you this. The average is like when a guy goes and robs a bank, he gets about $4,000.
Really? That's it?
That's it. Not very much at all. I'll tell you this. My federal restitution was $128,000.
Which is a lot more than you ever took.
Well, no, it's actually pretty close to what they gave me.
Gotcha.
Okay, so back up the bus. The first one, you got some confidence because you were successful, and then you decided you needed to do it again?
Well, what happened was I got, you know, a pretty sizable chunk of change, and like I told you, I didn't look at any price tags. I just was living for the day. And I remember sitting around one day and counting through some stacks of bills, and I think there was only like maybe
2,000 or 3,000 left, and I went, you know what? It's time to do it again.
Wait, so you were an overachiever. Like those losers who rob banks, like they get like $4,000. Dean goes in and he's like, you know what? That's just not enough. I need 40 minimum, or I'm just gonna stay and hang out for a while. So you were an over so you've been an overachiever basically your whole life.
I never looked at it that way.
Yeah, you know, you set a goal and you reached it.
You're joining us on Reinvention Radio, man. So, you know,
where to find the silver lining in the darkest cloud ever.
The darkest cloud ever.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, well, you know, I've never talked to...
If you're going to be bad, you better be good at it.
Yeah, I never spoke with a former bank robber. And did you have a nickname, like some kind of bandit, or?
No, I think the Michigan State Police did call me a knucklehead in the original article.
You couldn't even get like a cool nickname,
like you, knucklehead.
You know, like the guy in red, or some kind of baseball cap.
Yeah, did you have like a signature thing? Like, did you go in like, you know, with the, because you're a comedian, so did you go in with like the funny glasses with the nose kind of thing? I mean,
No, not at all.
But if you did it again, you probably would.
And one of the things that I read in the newspaper article after I was arrested was that the bank tellers said that I was always polite and I always said thank you.
There you go.
So the polite.
Hey, there's something. Look at me learning from my youth.
excuse me. May I please have just 50s and hundreds?
Yes.
Can you please put the fucking money in the bag?
Exactly.
<Really.
right? laughs>
Okay. So how'd you get busted?
Yeah, that's the,
okay,
exactly,
so,
right? It all is going well. You're doing well. You're an overachiever. You're making, yeah, exactly. Not looking at price tags. And
what happens is in crime, like I went back, and the second time I went, well, you know, if I bumped this up and made it a little more challenging for the bank teller, I could probably get more money. So then the second time I went in and wrote the note, I said that I have a bomb placed outside the bank.
You
that's
really,
a way to step it up.
That's up in the ante right there.
Yeah, and that, as a criminal, the FBI looks at that and they say, okay, this guy is progressively getting worse. He's going to hurt someone. He's now moved up even higher on our list of idiots we have to get.
Technically, so, knucklehead, but yes.
Knucklehead, yes. So by the time it had gotten to the fourth bank, I had said that I had a bomb outside of a school.
Ooh, now you're messing with the kids.
And oddly enough, I did that because I thought I would get more money, you know, because I said, make sure you give me all the money or else I'm going to
or else the kids are going to get it.
And there were two school of thoughts. One, I would get more money, and two, the police would be so busy, you know, emptying out the schools from the bomb scare that they wouldn't have time to come chasing after me.
Mm-hmm.
And all it did was made them throw more man hours and more effort into catching me.
Wow. So they caught you after the fourth one, and you were tied potentially to 8. You pleaded down to 4 because those were the 4 you were involved in. How much time did you actually get, and how much did you serve?
I served 97 months.
97?
Oh, wow.
So just over 8 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And, I mean, has that given you some good material?
You know what? It's one of those things that, there are, as a comic, you look for things in your life that are really funny that you can make funny and other people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some things in your life that are just so dark that you can't bring out on stage. And I do talk about how I was, you know, a knucklehead and I made a withdrawal from a bank where I didn't have a deposit, but I don't really touch on it too much because it was such a dark period in my life and I can't really find a whole lot of funny with it yet.
Yeah, no, I hear you. How long ago did you get out?
The last day that I served was in 2009.
Wow. Okay. So it's still fairly recent. And I mean, obviously, you know, just in seeing the pics and all, you're not a small boy. So, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, you're able to hold your own there. But, you know, we don't have to go too deep in that because let's actually make some people laugh here. And if you want to talk to Dean or me or Mary, we are live at 866-977-2346. Hit number 1. And we will be right back with more Reinvention Radio and Dean Chardin right after the break.
Thank you. You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
Yo. All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Reinvention Radio. So glad you are here. Diener, I got to be honest, man. You know, I've battled with depression for a long time, and it finally came to light that, like, genetically, I'm predispositioned to have, like, really low levels on my neurotransmitters, like my serotonin and my dopamine and all that stuff. Like, on a scale of 0 to 100, mine are, like, in the teens. We're talking, like, you know, 11 on the low end and, like, 17 on the high end. So, I mean, genetically, I've got that predisposition to go dark. And, you know, man, once you get in that place, man, it is so hard to get out. How did you turn the corner, man?
I've talked about this a couple times before. I think that, you know, no matter what you're dealing with, there has to come a point in your life where you go, okay, I've lost enough. You know, whether it be a relationship, whether it be depression, whether it be addiction to drugs or criminal activity like I was involved in. And, you know, my sister had passed away when I was in prison. My grandmother passed away. They wouldn't allow me to go to the funerals because I was a violent criminal. My dad had come down with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And there was just a point in my life where I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. This mm-hmm. isn't who I am. Mm-hmm. And gradually, you know, going through therapy and talking to people and just having a great support group around me, I started to realize that, you know, who I am as a person. And that person is, I'm a funny guy who has a gift for making people laugh. And I had some really good mentors in the business. Terry Dancer, who now works for National Geographic. Art Vila,
because National Geographic is like one of the funniest publications in production right now, so that makes sense.
A lot of people know Terry actually got his start in the comedy circuit. He was Howie.
By the way, if we're being completely honest here, dude, like I remember the National Geographic with like the African women and the titties. Like,
oh, yeah,
I mean,
that was my first
really?
Boob,
yeah, I'm sorry, Mary. I'm sorry I had to go there, but like that, I think I still have that one like under my bed somewhere.
Okay, so
sorry.
The visual I had in my head about that magazine was their big earrings and their ears.
See, that's what you were, of course, a woman. You were looking at the fashion accessories. I was looking at like the nipples that were like 12 inches long. I was like, Jesus, how does that happen?
That hurts.
I didn't care how it happened, really. I come right down to it, but
we digress.
We digress, which is pretty much what we always do. So, I mean, look, Robin Williams, right? I mean, funny as all get out, had the career that so many comedians aspire to. So many people loved him, but he just couldn't get out of the darkness, man. How, if you had a chance to sit down with him, what would you have said?
Oh my God, that's such a tough question. You know, everybody's battle is different. And, you know, depression and comedy, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. Mm-hmm. They
yeah,
are.
They do.
So many of my comedian friends are, you know, one bad decision away from, you know, just not being here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things. You know, when you go to the club and you see a comedian and he makes you laugh, it's a great experience and it's wonderful and you love it and you leave and you're so high. A comedian goes back and analyzes every laugh, every look, every detail of the show.
You know what I mean? It's such a weird thing for us.
Would you say that most comedians are perfectionists?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that seems to be a trait that, and I think it's entertaining in general. Like when you try to get up on a stage, I don't know how it is for you nowadays, but like I just did an event where I had, you know, about 300 people there over the course of a few days. And like literally the things that I remember are the things I shouldn't even be thinking about. Like it's like you focus on the 0.5% of what didn't work as opposed to the 99.5%. And wait, I'm checking my math here, but that's right. Yeah.
So
the 99.5% that, you know, that did work. And so as a comedian, when you've got your best stuff going, are you looking at the folks that are laughing, or are you looking at the one guy that you just can't break through to?
I'm looking at the one guy the entire time.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for that smile.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's, that's why I love really big stages where there's bright lights, because I can't,
can't see
them.
The
I can
audience,
only hear
yeah.
them.
Who's when on I'm their cell phone?
When I'm in a small club and you can see them, and especially the glow of the cell phone while I'm talking, mm-hmm. I'm like, how come I'm not reaching them? This works everywhere else. What is wrong with this? What am I doing?
Yeah. So how do you level it out, man? Because the monumental highs and the monumental lows, have you just kind of come to peace that there's a middle ground that you have to live within?
Well, I think that's one of the benefits of my life now. I look for the highs in everything. You know what I mean? I try to find the funny in all of it. I don't just look for the highs and lows anymore.
You know,
I don't focus on the lows.
Yeah.
Hey, do you know Rusty Nails?
He's. I mean, I have a few. What are you talking about? I might actually be sitting on right now. Now, wait. You know, you got to get some new chairs here. I think I'm getting tetanus. Like literally, like as I'm sitting.
Rusty Nails is a comedian. He was on 91X as a DJ in the 90s. Just outrageously awesome, funny. He's a And he does the circuit, but he said that's what he does, is he looks for the funny as a default. Even in bad stuff, he's always looking for the funny.
Yeah, I think that that's the only way that, you know, as someone who's battled with depression, I think that's one of the ways that you can climb out of the hole, mm-hmm. is you have to find the silver lining in the darkest cloud ever that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. My wife came down with ovarian cancer. We had been married less than a year. Mm. She came to me one day and she said, Dean, I have a bump on my belly. I said, what do you mean? Let me feel. And I felt it. And, you know, you could actually feel the bump there. And I was like, wow, we got to get this checked out. Have you pooped this week? And she's like, you idiot. This is serious.
Seriously?
So,
oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
So we went to the doctor and we got there and they did a CAT scan and they took a look at what was going on inside. And it turned out that she had a 7-inch wide by 5-inch deep mass on her ovaries.
Holy moly.
Man.
You wish you were 7x5, bro.
Like I said, we had been married, you know, less than a year, and I was like, wow, this is real. So the process went through, and they finally decided that they were going to have to go in and cut it out and do a biopsy on it. So the doctor had come in, and the doctor said, well, you know, we're going to have to take it out. It's too big for us to take out the normal way, so we're going to have to do it by cesarean. I said, well, what the hell is that? But I really honestly didn't know what cesarean was.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, well, that's kind of like you guys are going to have a baby. And without thinking, the comedian in me went, oh, great, we'll name it fucking Lumpy. You know? And then I was like, oh, you insensitive jerk. You know, your wife's going through all this. I can't believe it. And my wife, who I love and is such a big part of my sport group, looks at me and goes, you can tell from the CAT scan it looks just like you.
Good for her.
And we laughed, and that's how we got through it. We found a way to laugh through the darkness.
Yeah.
And we laughed through chemo treatments, and we laughed through doctor appointments, and her PET scans finally came back, and she's in remission. And
awesome.
It's just, I know it doesn't always end that way, but mm-hmm. that's how we deal with things nowadays. We say, okay, it's as dark as it can be. Where is it at? How do we get through this? Let's smile, because that's the only thing that's carried us through everything else.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of a husband and wife joke. So, you know, this guy's been going on a fishing trip, like, forever with his buddies. And so one year his wife comes in and she just goes, you know, man, I got to put my foot down. This is the year that you're not going to go. And he's like, oh, man, you know, I've been going for years and years. And she's like, yeah, but, you know, you got kids now. You got to stay home, this, that, and the other. And he's like, man, how am I going to break this to my buddies? So he tells his buddies, of course, his buddies are like super disappointed. You know, they're like, man, you know, you got to figure out a way to go, this, that, and the other. And comes home and tells his wife, he's like, yeah, you know, I told him I'm not going on the fishing trip. You know, it's hard, but I told him. And she's like, you know what? I find that to be incredibly sexy. And I've been reading this book called 50 Shades of Grey, honey. And I want you to tie me up. And Once you got me tied up, I want you to do anything you want. Next day, he shows up with a fishing trip. So anyway, long story short, what's give me, you like that one? Way, no. Way's actually smiling over there. So yeah, thanks. Right. So so come on, man. What's your go to joke right now? You've got, you know, somebody says to you, you know, you got a child who's well, not a child. You got a depressed person in front of you. What are you telling to make him laugh? What's the go to joke right now?
It's you know, like, my jokes are more conversational and are more about observations of life. Like, I live in Missouri right now. And
that's funny right there.
I know. Why are you not out here? Seriously, dude.
All right, I get it. I'm laughing. Weather. That's good. Yeah, good. Great. Thanks. That makes me laugh.
So, not too long ago, they came up with this whole anti-texting and driving campaign, and I'm a big fan of that. I don't think you should be texting and driving because you can hurt yourself or someone else. But in Missouri, they have, like, all these signs. They've got, like, a billboard that says, hang up, drive alive. Then they got an electronic sign that says the rest area is a text area. And then they came up with a bumper sticker that says TXULATR. Do you know what that means?
Yes, text you later.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't speak text speak, and as I was trying to figure it out, I hit the fucking car in front of me. You know, like that's kind of my style of humor.
Yeah, I love
it's
that.
It's just about life.
Exactly.
It's true, though. They're so big on the don't text and drive, but have you seen the billboards?
You like, got to read it to get the message.
Where they got half-naked women up there. How the hell am I supposed to concentrate on what I'm driving?
Yeah, and they say it takes, you know, just a matter of seconds to get in an accident because you're looking at your phone, but then you're reading this thing on the freeway.
You've gone at least 1,000 feet.
Yeah,
you've been cruising. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, you know what? Speaking of cars, you know, one of my favorite bumper stickers, and I'm sure you've seen this one because you probably have it. But it's like, you know how those guys always have those stickers when they run marathons? And it's like that white circular sticker with the black numbers, and it's 26.2. And then, you know, other people have their bumper sticker, which is like the 13.1, you know, which is a half marathon. And then I was driving the other day, and I saw this guy, and his bumper sticker had 0.0.
I'm not going anywhere.
I know. I was like, that's my guy right now. And it, like, frankly, if I can, I would actually drive from the couch in the living room to the refrigerator. If I could figure out how to get a car from that living room to the kitchen, I probably would drive. So
your wife is proud.
She's super
college
proud.
Mini fridge.
Yeah, right.
All you got to do is get a college mini fridge. That's what I got in my living room.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. All right. When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more here with Dean Jordan. Be right back.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Olscher.
Alrighty, ready. So, here's what I'm thinking, Dean. It's very rare that people have the opportunity to get the ear of a working comedian, a famous comedian, someone who actually does this stuff for a living. So we want to hear your best joke. Clean, dirty, doesn't matter. We want to hear your best joke, and then Dean, Mary, Wade, and I are going to rate it. And you know, and
putting them on the spot.
Yeah, that's the plan. We're gonna rate it. So give us a holler with that joke. 866-977-2346. number one. So give us a holler with your absolute best joke, and I'll give away some books. So I'll give away some books, free copies of What Is Your What? Discover the One Amazing Thing You Were Born to Do, or Internet Profits, your choice. So 866-977-2346. And again, hit number one. Give us your best joke, and then we will rate it for you. But either way, you'll get a book. So Dean, what's on the agenda for you, man? And by the way, how do people find out more information about you? I haven't really given you a chance to do that yet. So where do people find you?
Listen, go to my website, which is www.oldschooltimeout.com.
How'd you come up with that?
Well, it comes from like the psychologist and stuff. Around the early 60s and stuff started changing the way that we raise children. And the latest fashion they have is timeout time, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, the little kid gets in trouble. They're like, okay, Johnny, go to your room. You're in big trouble. And Johnny's like, I got a cell phone, a TV, and an Xbox in there. That's a break from you bitching, whatever. And they,
exactly.
Like, I think our timeout time is just lazy parenting. I don't like it. And I remember back to when I was a kid, we used to have timeout time, but it was old school timeout. Our old school timeout was the amount of time that dad took out of his day to whoop your ass when you screwed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, like, what's the deal with all this? Like, I mean, I get it. You shouldn't hit your kid with the switch. I mean, I get all that stuff. But, I mean, Adrian Peterson was only doing what his dad used to do to him. I mean, granted, it's not cool that you do it. But at the same token, when did we cross the line that we got to be in everybody's house? I mean, I get it. But at the same token, it's like, you know, I mean, so, come on, man. Kids need a little whooping every now and again.
Yeah,
and,
right. But they, so, Mom, I'm going to call Child Protective Services, you know?
Yeah, like, right.
And my
See,
mom.
That's what the problem is. We are just way too involved in other people's lives. I don't want to see any child get beaten, don't get me wrong. But there's nothing wrong with tapping that ass when he screws up. In fact, I think they should do it more.
Well,
and to prove it, all you got to do is go to Walmart once in a while. You can find out there's kids there that need to be beaten.
By the way, it doesn't matter where they build a Walmart, does it? It doesn't matter where they build a Walmart.
The same people will
like, they could build a Walmart in Beverly Hills.
Yes.
Like in the richest zip code on earth, right?
Yes.
And
people will be there.
How does that
happen? I don't know.
There'll be a 400-pound man in little tiny shorts and a tube top.
Seriously.
Picking up crayons and porn. I'm telling you, Walmart is the death.
You know what? And actually, if you run out of material, I mean, I guess that's probably the best place to go, right? Is just you just go to Walmart.
That in the airport.
You know what? Do you remember when people actually used to like dress up to go on a plane? Like it was like a big deal to go on a plane. Now they're like, you're lucky. Everybody's got like, you know, one of those Borat bikinis on. You know what I'm talking about? One of those.
Yeah, it's because you got to go through security. I would go to the airport naked if I could and then put on my clothes after I get
and
past
just,
that stupid
exactly.
machine.
Actually, somebody just got tased in L.A. Did you see that?
Oh, did they really?
Like, because their flights were delayed or whatever, or he got bumped off a flight. He was like, fuck it. I'm out of here. I am literally running through this airport naked. Like, done. This is, you want to bump me from my
awesome.
Flight? Yeah, deal with these bumps right here.
Yeah, that's a horrible visual.
You know what? That's a visual. I fly a lot of Southwest. That's the guy I usually sit next to. Is the naked guy that just got paid. It's wonderful.
Wait, and on the other side, you've got that woman. Don't. I swear to God, there must be like a standard issue. You know how like in the military they give you the standard issue of stuff. You know, like you know, you've got to wear this, that, and the other. When you start collecting Social Security, like with that first check, I think every woman that collects Social Security gets the bottle of that same perfume.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yes.
It's like a standard issue. Like so.
Hey, listen, before we get too far along, I know we're getting short on time. I wanted to tell you this. I just booked my first television show.
Nice. Where?
Absolutely.
I'm so excited. I'm going to be on a program called Swamp Murders, which I just found this out. I went down and auditioned. In Atlanta on Monday, and I got the contract for the show on Tuesday. It's on Investigative Discovery Channel, the show called Swamp Murders, episode 309.
Okay,
I have no idea when it's coming out.
What?
And what's funny about that?
Yeah, I'm just trying to
like,
figure out.
Are you going to make
a disconnect?
Are you going to make an alligator laugh? Or, I mean, what's the.
No,
what's the
plan? You know, like, I'm like an onion. Each layer you peel back, there's another one and another one. And part of the thing, you know, growing up and being who I was always in love being on stage, whether it was stand-up comedy or singing or acting, and I've been pursuing the acting for quite a while, and I finally got my first television show, and I'm so flippin' excited about
it. Nice, man. Congrats
on
that.
What are you going to do on the show?
I can't really talk about it, but I will tell you this. They do crime reenactments,
And I'm
that's not a stretch for you then.
I get to play one of the good guys. That's why it's a stretch.
Oh, there you go.
So you got to really get your acting chops up to speed. Then,
again,
for
putting yourself in someone else's shoes, I get to see what it's like on the other side of the guns. Oh, that's awesome.
Well, that's awesome. Good for you. Yeah. You'll have to let us know when it's airing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will. I'll send you all an email. I can't wait for it to come out.
When are you going to tape?
We tape down in Atlanta. We shoot the first week in June.
Oh, that's so coming right up.
Yeah, you're probably looking at like 2-3 months in post-production, and then it'll come out sometime around there. But I'll shoot you guys an email and let you know. And
yeah, awesome.
I'm so excited.
We know a celebrity.
We do. And the celebrity.
From Missouri.
Oh, I was going to say. I thought you were talking about Wade. You're talking about somebody else. Oh, sorry. Yeah. All right. So real quick here, man. Let's just get this out right now, which is, I know for a fact that there are people who want to be funny, but just can't be funny for the life of them. You've been doing this now forever. Is that something you can learn? Can you learn how to be funny, or are you just funny or you aren't?
I think you can learn to be funnier, but I don't think everyone has it.
No, I think it's like having a great singing voice. You can learn to sing better, but if you don't have a rockin' killer voice, just hang it up.
But let me say this.
It's kind of the same thing.
I can see that.
Don't quit. If that's what you want to do, study it, learn it, grow from it, find the things in your life that are great and do it. And if no one laughs, then go home and write again and find something until I do.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, that itch will be in you forever and it'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, that's really, really great advice. So other than making alligators smile, what's next on the docket for Mr. Diener here?
Well, I've got a couple of projects I'm working on. I have a reality show about my life called The Long Road Home that I'm trying to pitch and get out there.
Nice.
Hollywood's looked at it a couple times. They're not really sure what to do with it yet because they don't, you know, like I said, I'm an onion and there's a lot of layers and they haven't figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, because once you go home, isn't the series kind of over?
Well, that's it. You know, like when I go out on the road and I do stand-up comedy, we usually look for somebody that's down and out that we can help. That's kind of my way of getting back.
Oh, I love that.
And that's really what the show is about. So, like, when I go out on the road, there's usually two other comics with me. And we just go out and we find, whether it's a soup kitchen or Habitat for Humanity or helping out a llama farm or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
We go out and do things instead of just sitting in the hotel room and watching CNN and porn.
Nice, man. Yeah. So if we can't find you for a while, you got hung up at the sheep farm. We're just going to assume you got tired of the llamas and went straight for the sheep. So one more time, give out the website so people can get a hold of you, Diener.
Sure. It's again, they can see the video from The Long Road Home. They can check that out and support it. You can find out about upcoming comedy dates, and hopefully you'll have some information about Swamp Murders on there before long. Anyway, it's www.oldschooltimeout.com.
Well, my man, I'm really, really proud of you. Really glad that you got things, you know, back in order. And I know how hard it is to come up when everything's down and when it's super dark, man. I know what it's like to try to turn on that light. So super proud of where you're at, man. Keep up the amazing work. And got to tell you, man, it's pretty exciting to hear about what you're up to. So thanks for joining us today. And until the next episode of Reinvention Radio, for Wade, Mary, and myself, we'll talk to you later.
Thank you guys so much. Keep laughing.
Yeah, all right, man.
Take it easy.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsha, visit reinventionradio.com.